You want some sexy? You want to laugh? License to Talk.
License to Talk is brought to you by First in Buffalo. Fireman owned and operated. Custom apparel, custom hats. 389 Abbott Road. Get your custom gear at First in Buffalo. Dog Ears Bookstore. Stop into the cafe and bookstore and enjoy a welcoming hometown atmosphere, all while supporting programs that spread creativity and literacy throughout South Buffalo and beyond. Don't get your coffee from Timmy when you can get it from Tommy. Charlie's Boatyard, 1111 Furman Boulevard. Come and enjoy a nice cold drink and a beautiful sunset. All right, Marky, episode 87. We have Mike Canfield here. He is a Buff State Bengal graduate, 2013, a South Park grad. And more importantly, he is the nephew of Wilbur Fulton, our number one rated guest. Mike, welcome to the program.
Sorry, how are you? Up to
good, one. Good. I'm glad you kind of followed up there with the important part. Wilbur's nephew.
We'll talk about growing up with Wilbur. We'll get started right there.
Yeah. I mean, who else has an uncle that just out of nowhere just imitates Johnny Cash and O.J. Simpson? You know, just how many other, you know, Mickey from Rocky? That was always this big thing. I think whenever I drink with him, he'd turn into Mickey trying to talk me into, you know, come on, Rock, have another one.
We always walk that way to the bookstore just so. We hope he can come out and tell us a joke.
Yeah. And he'll come out and go, you guys hear the latest Dirty Johnny was joke? Yeah.
He's like, he like gets up, he's like, stiff as a new broom.
He's great. Oh, we love Wilbur.
I savor when I have a chance to hang out with him.
Oh,
I, you know, my dad was in a hospital on a ventilator for like 6 months. So the first thing my dad did when he got out of the hospital and off the ventilator, he was like, I want to go to a bar. So we went to Potter's, and it was like Wilbur held court for like 5 hours, and like we're just all like blasted, just listening and tell jokes. And it was like the best afternoon, you know. It's such a good time.
Oh, I want to get a translator here to just see if the German he's saying is real. Like, see what he's really saying. Like, what'd he pick up? I don't know.
I was in Europe with him, and it was incredible.
Oh, really? For the hockey stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, I can only imagine.
They just couldn't get enough of him.
Oh, he's a beauty. We had a family reunion. This is probably a decade ago, and he, you know, he's pouring himself Jack and Cokes, but he'd pour the Jack up to the top of the glass and pour a little bit of Coke in, and Ray Fulton said, said, Dad, that's a real nice Jack and Coke. And he just went, he said, Ray, Coke's not getting me where I want to go right now. Like, 2 hours later, he's just passed out.
Complete honesty.
Yeah, he's something else.
Well, Mike has a love for journalism, Marky. And how did you find your way into journalism, first of all, Mark?
So I guess, like, this is kind of a long story, but I was always like, I used to read Jim Kelly in the Buffalo News when I was growing up, like, you know, a big hockey guy. Like, I mean, that guy is like the, you know, the ultimate hockey writer. And I, you know, I delivered the Buffalo News like every good South Buffalo kid. And, you know, I just always thought it was cool. I thought it was a cool job. And I thought, you know, one day I'm going to do this. You know, my journey there, obviously. So I graduated high school in 1995. I don't graduate college to 2013. So I'm obviously don't take the traditional route to do that. You know, it was tough. I had a tough time growing up. You know, my mom was sick. I was taking care of my sister. You know, we were pretty dirt poor, like gas turn off kind of poor. We lost our house in South Buffalo at one point. So I came out of South Park. I like going to college might have been like I might as well have like tried to walk to Hawaii, you know, like I would have had like the same success. I had no idea what I was doing. So, you know, I ended up taking jobs, like menial jobs that, you know, I don't know. I think minimum wage back then was like 6 1/4, maybe even less than that. And I was taking care of my sister and I was trying to keep the bills paid and everything. In 1998, I got into Buff State through the EOP program, which is this educational opportunity program for like, it's basically for disadvantaged youth who like don't have money. They didn't take the SAT. Like I didn't take the SAT. I couldn't have cared less about the SAT. Like it just wasn't even on my radar, in high school. Like I had bigger things to worry about. And, you know, the EOP program, I went there. I did go to Buff State for a year from 1998 to 99. I had like a 4.0. And then I dropped out again because of things that were going on at home. I had to take care of things. And then fast forward a decade, you know, and it's like, it kind of like became now or never time. So it's like 2009. And my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, was very encouraging about, like, you should do this. And I'm like, oh yeah, like I want to get into journalism, which is like, it would be like being like, I'm going to pilot I'm going to pilot the boat on the Titanic, like 10 minutes before it hits the iceberg. You know? That's what I want to do. So it's like newspapers, like the bottom's falling out, you know? And my whole goal had been like, I'm going to work at the Buffalo News. This is going to be awesome. And it was just like, you know, everybody's familiar with what's been going on there. So that's a tough road, but I did end up there. You know, I really enjoyed that. So I kind of like, you know, I went through school. I was working construction jobs while I'm in school, taking night classes. I'm like interviewing people on my lunch break with like chainsaws going off in the background. Like I grinded through college. Awesome. Yeah. Like I was like, I really want this. So like, you know, I got a job at the Hamburg Sun while I was still in college, which was like a small weekly paper. It was like my first experience getting laid off. That's a story that I'm not a big fan of the guy who laid me off there. That's still a sore point with me.
Is he still there?
No. Yeah. So like, it ended up being a great thing because I went from that to immediately picking up freelance gigs with the Buffalo News. And I formed a great relationship with my editor at that time, who's a reporter named Maki Becker. I think she's like the bureau chief of the like crime and justice desk. She's honestly like one of the best people I've ever met. Like she's done so much for me in my career. She got me into the news, my byline in the news. Like those were all huge things for me. So, you know, I have a lot of love for her. You know, to be able to see through, like, to get those jobs, like, the Buffalo News is still a prestigious place to work. And back then, it was even more prestigious. Sure. So, like,
we're a one-paper town.
Yeah. So,
it's
like,
the paper.
Yeah. And there's people that work there from all over the country. It's not just Buffalo people. So, like, this, like, scrub from South Buffalo who graduates college when he's, like, 36, like, for her to, like, see the value in me, like, meant a lot to me, you know, like,
yeah, but you're not going to be a ballerina, you know?
Like, yeah,
you
could, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like, there was like, I obviously, like I said, I grinded, like it's, there's some like talent there, you know? And,
yeah, it's not an accident.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was like, I mean, I still talk to her all the time. Like she's just the best. So that, you know, I spent some time there. I couldn't get in there full time at the time. And it got to the point where I was working like roughly 60 to 70 to 80 hours a week between two different jobs. And I ended up going to Business First, which is also a great gig.
Yeah, because we had Jack Connors on. And
oh, Jack did, is awesome.
Yeah,
Jack's
a great guy.
Is such a good dude.
But I mean, he talked about how that paper just knows how to make money.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It is crazy.
And I covered the law beat. So like, if you would have asked me before that beat, like what my opinion of lawyers was, I probably would have been like, oh, you know, like jerk offs or whatever. Like, I just didn't know. Mm-hmm. And I got to know lawyers and like kind of like speak their language. And I mean, they're fascinating people. Not all of them, like some are terrible, but sure. Like in Buffalo, like, you know, like, I don't know, there's a guy named Dennis Vacco. He used to be the AG in New York.
Yeah,
like,
he's here all the time.
Yeah. I walk into his office and like he doesn't know me from a hole in the ground, you know? And so I walk in and he's got a huge painting of the fighting 69th during the Civil War, making a charge at Fredericksburg, which is like a battle they're very known for. And I walk in, I was like, oh, it's the fighting 69th at Fredericksburg. And it blew him away. Like that made our relationship there. Cause then he's like, wow, like, how do you know that? Like, how did nobody's ever known that in 20 years I've had this up? So I had a lot of experiences like that where I really, like, got to know lawyers and appreciate their craft and what they do. You know, from there, I think a job at Buff State opened up in the marketing and communications office. You know, it goes without saying that Buff State is, you know, without Buff State, I don't know where I'd be, you know, like.
You really love Buff State.
Yeah, like, you know, you guys might know me in a different capacity. the asshole on Seneca Street, you know, or whatever, but like.
No, we're not guys with degrees, you know, we didn't do that grind.
Yeah.
It's a whole, another expensive thing that people do.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, you hope it pays off, like, when you use it. Like, you went to school and you used the degree. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, they go to school and they're not, like, dependent on it.
They're a history major and they're a police officer.
You've leaned on that also.
I've been able to create a career, and I've had some help along the way. Like I said, Baki, my former boss at Buff State, who now works at UB as well, a guy named Jared Dahlgren, they took chances on me, you know, and really gave me an opportunity to thrive in the job. And like I said, Buff State is, like, my... I have a lot of love for Buff State, and to be able to go back there and, like, do that job was really awesome. You know, and it led to my opportunity at UB, which is also a great opportunity to work at a bigger university. The thing about UB that's really cool is that UB is, you know, you may have noticed in Buffalo, there's a lot of institutions where it kind of looks like the floor is falling out. UB is very much like, hey, we're going to be a top 25 research institute. You know, like, there's a lot of positivity. It's huge. It's, you know, I'm still meeting people. So it's been a good move. And I still keep my foot in the journalism game. I still cover NU hockey, which is a good way for me to, you know, go back to my first love all the way back when I was reading Jim Kelly in the Buffalo News. Like, it kind of gives me that hockey writer kind of feel.
That's great.
You've written for... Like, you've been in press boxes for the Sabres, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that, like, it's a cool opportunity.
That's your hometown team.
Yeah. So that was actually a little weird because I'm so emotionally attached to the Sabres that, like, being in the press box was kind of like, I had to, like, detach myself.
Yeah. So you can't, like, be cheering there, right?
I was like, I don't know if I want to cover the Sabres. Like, I'm too, you know, like, I'm kind of, I kind of want to have my tickets and whatever, watch them. But, you know, like, I've covered boxing matches front row, which is actually kind of gross because the sweat and the blood, like, it's real. Like, it's like, you're, you know, like, your laptop just speckled with blood and you're like, damn, I definitely breathe that in. Like, that's like, I hope that guy's okay.
How do you get a press pass? We were talking about this. We've been talking about it.
Before. Honestly. Like, a podcast, sometimes people are like, no, everybody has a podcast. They're like, you have to have a blog. Like, you have to write something. You think that's still true?
No, I don't. I think you guys could absolutely get a press pass. Yeah, if you contact the right people and explain what you do. I think maybe 10 years ago that was true, maybe even 5 years ago, but the media landscape is shifting.
Sure.
You know, it's why the Sabres had to eventually open up to some blogs and, you know.
You see Die by the Blade, they're asking questions, like, you see those guys.
There's opportunities where before it was like one or two beat reporters and, you know, it's, you know, I absolutely think you guys could get press passes if you can show the angle you have to cover something. I mean, I sat front row at a UFC event here in, like, for the Niagara Gazette. Like, that's probably not number one on their list of, like, publications they want, you know.
Yeah,
but like, I mean, we just asked.
Yeah, you use what you got, right?
Yeah, and like, I wrote about it. I was there till 3 a.m. It was awesome, and it was a great experience. Like, I keep all those.
You're
press
a guy
passes,
we need on
so.
Our team.
Yeah, yeah, we need I can help with that.
Always making connections, Marky. That's what he is. He's a communication specialist.
I mean, yeah, because, like, in some way, like, now, like, exactly what your job probably is at UB, it's, like, it's all-encompassing with the journalist now, right?
Mm-hmm,
they do all that.
Yeah, so, like, I write articles. I do social media for the IT department there. I write emails. I write newsletters. I put together surveys. Like, the job, like, the actual job as a whole is much different than, hey, you write this article about this person or whatever it is. Like, it's all encompassing. And I like that because it keeps things fresh. It keeps me, you know, I'm old, like, I'm 46, but I know what I can like use Instagram like fairly well. Like, you know, like I still don't use TikTok. Like, I despise TikTok, so I'm never going to use it. But, you know, I've been able to like keep up on things, and there's something fun about that. Sometimes not so fun if, you know, people are mad about something, but that's
what I was going to say. Like, how do you deal with if somebody goes, because here's the thing I don't like. They call them bots. Somebody that doesn't use their real name on Twitter or X, we'll say X. And it really bothers me that sometimes I have to interact with these people. Sometimes they're funny. But what are the policies there? Like, you just don't answer someone if they don't have a real name, or don't answer at all?
It really depends on the situation. Yeah. It depends on what they're saying, what the situation is. You know, there are things that happen at Buff State where it was like, you know, you just get, you know, proverbially dogpiled. Like, it's just message after message after message, and you just can't keep up with them all. So, like, maybe you put out a statement saying, here's where we're at, and that doesn't placate anybody, you know? Right. Like, a lot of times people are just mad because everyone else is mad, or, I mean, you could see that today, like, right? Like, people just parrot things they hear, and, you know.
You can't believe everything you see either with this AI and everything else.
Yeah, it's the world of AI is super interesting. That's actually something I've been super interested in lately, is because it's going to change everything for us.
Like, everything.
Like, literally, like, in a year, like, you don't even have to have me sitting here. You can just replicate my voice and have me say whatever you want on your podcast, you know? Like,
that's,
I hope you
scary.
Guys don't do that, but
I mean, I think that more of, like, the simpler things that people don't have to actually do anymore, like, right,
cashier.
Mm-hmm. Like, so, like, every thing has like an email template, and it's like, sometimes maybe you want to know where this person's really coming from. Like, I want you to type the email.
Yeah.
And not have, like, I want to be like, I want to know who I'm walking into. Like, you have an AI write your email, and I think you're the brightest and whatever. And then you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like,
and that's something you know, I've used ChatGPT to like sort data for me, and, you know, but it doesn't have my voice, you know?
Right.
And like, that's how I've gotten where I've gotten, is through my voice. So I don't want to, you know, leave that just so like some, whatever it is.
You know? But I don't think that like things are going to die off. Like, I think that it's like more of a challenge. It's like, I don't think that a computer can write like a mother and child relationship.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
You know, like, I don't think it's going to take over an author's job. You know?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
I think it's more of like a challenge, like, oh, no, we're much more creative than a machine.
And I also think that it's going to spotlight real creativity, because you're going to want an authentic voice. You're not going to want something spit out by a computer. I mean, there's AI-generated stories now that are just
All
the movie posters, have you seen those?
I haven't.
Those are pretty funny.
I'm going to look them up.
Man. They're pretty bad, though. Like, you could take the worst thing in the world and make it into a Pixar movie.
Oh, picture. Really?
Wow. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm terrible. I can say
amazing and terrible. Yeah. And then the other one is, I'm listening to this podcast the other day. It's an AI-generated podcast with Bobby the Brain Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon.
Wow.
Two guys that are dead.
That's amazing.
And it sounds like they're talking about today's issues.
That's crazy.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So that stuff's nuts. I also think there's, like, good – I think, like, medical technology is just going to be revolutionized by it. Like, I think they're going to, there's like certain algorithms that they can put all your like medical data in and be like, Mike's going to, you know, have a whatever. I don't want to say, because I don't really want to have it, but like, in 5 years, you're at high risk for this. Or, you know, maybe my doctor can already tell
me.
Musk
like,
is saying
but
that
then
now.
Think of it the other way. Like, is the person that's running this machine an actual doctor? You know what I mean? Like, because that person now knows how to use AI to.
That's also, there's,
you
know, so many
to
different
get the knowledge, you know. Yeah. So it's like, there's so much perspective on all of it, you know. But we're nerds, you know. Like,
we used to use
Encyclopedia Britannica to figure things out. Like, much like we could figure things out.
Yeah,
just looking up endless data. You know?
It's interesting. It's gonna be. I'm also like, I think like one of my one of my hot takes is that human beings are going to live much longer than they're currently living because of technology, medical technology.
That'd be great.
I think that's probably going to be happening sooner than we think.
Turn me into a cyborg, Marky.
Yeah, well, Jim's all about conspiracy theories. Like, one day he's like, our mouths are too small.
I haven't heard that.
He's like, our mouths are going to be too small to live.
I don't
think
anybody's ever accused you of that.
No. I'll tell you, what was the one? I was arguing with someone the other day. They were saying, oh, the aliens. I'm like, that's us. That's us flying that technology around, scaring the shit out of you. And they thought I was crazy, and they believed in aliens. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's a...
Yeah, but like you're writing, like, so we just talked to Dan Egan, you know, and he like found a thread in his journalism. Do you think that you could ever find a thread of like what you've started writing about and like go through and like pull out like a book's worth of something? You know what I mean?
I think that I've bounced around so much that it would be difficult. I think when I was at the news, like I covered mostly suburban towns, and like, I live in the suburbs now, but like growing up, like, and I don't know if you guys felt this way, but I always felt like the suburbs, were just like rich kid, like rich people.
Sure,
like,
that's what you remember. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So like, I always wanted to be in this, like, cover the city. Like, I wanted to cover like crime on, you know, in a city. I wanted to be like boots on the ground. I have a very like, my view of how journalism should be done is very like on the ground, shoe leather. Like it's a trade that you work at. Like journalists used to, like old school journalists are not like, you know, Harvard kids or whatever. They're
Hammond Eggers.
Yeah. They're guys that, you know, put the time and effort walking, knocking on doors, you know, doing that kind of stuff. And I always felt like that was, you know, important to like build your craft and like, you know, it's a skill, it's a trade you're really working at, not something you go to Columbia for $100,000 a year and, you know, come out and be like, well, now I'm a journalist. And
that's like, what Dan Egan did.
He did.
Dan, I apologize. I haven't met you, but I apologize.
That's hilarious.
I mean, you know, there's a lot. Funny. There's a lot.
Oh, that's great. But no, yeah, I totally understand that. Like, you know, because like, I just always think about the podcast, you know, is there a threat? You know, is there something, but, you know, weird saying that you're like, you said you're a nerd and you love like Gettysburg and like the Civil War and stuff. So if you were to say like start your own book, like, how would you start it off to like be like, I'm writing about the Civil War. Like, how do I catch somebody's attention? What?
Yeah, that's
what story.
Like, the reason we say that, Dan started with a viral video with someone jumping into a lake and dying from the phosphorus.
Yeah.
So he's writing about phosphorus. So he's going to take you to Florida and tell you how it starts. You know, this is what could happen.
Yeah.
Like, what would be like the attention getting story that you'd be like, oh, I got to start this.
So, I mean, Gettysburg is like full of that, but I'm really interested in Western New York connections to Gettysburg. Most of them are well covered. Like, you can look up, you know, on day one of the battle, Bayard Wilkinson loses his leg and dies in the first
days.
That
was day one?
Yeah, that was day one. And,
that's the guy we were looking up earlier.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
Yeah. Yeah. So he gets killed on the first day, and that's his father. But that's why that story is so big, is his father is a New York Times war correspondent. And I don't know if you've read what he writes on July 4th after the battle.
No.
But it's pretty powerful. Like, it's like, you know, who can cover a battle where their son has been found dead in a basement where he never should have been. And so there's like, you know, these are the Wilkinsons are like, that's like the founder of Buffalo kind of stuff, you know? And there was more than just Bayard. There were other sons that went off to the Civil War, but there's, you know, Alonzo Cushing who like manned his cannon on the third day during Pickett's charge until he was, you know, killed, taking, you know, with like open wounds in his stomach, still firing his cannon. You know, there's, you know, I guess I'll back up. I think what's interesting about the Civil War, and I think for me it really shines at Gettysburg, you have like people that are just normal everyday people.
Farmers.
Yes, farmers,
politicians.
School teachers, politicians.
They're in like charge of things,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, politicians. you know, there's generals who are politicians. Like, they call them political generals. Like
what the fuck is that?
Yeah, like, all of a sudden you're, like, in charge of a whole corps in the biggest land battle in the Western Hemisphere. Like,
yeah,
it's
your
insane.
Last thing across your desk was the pile of shit.
Yeah, like, it's insane, right? Like, it's like, even happened
I'd
in Buffalo.
A life
you
to
know?
You.
It's like, oh, he's a politician. He's going to lead everything. So, you have, like, these, you know, these crazy acts of heroism that go on, and it, just regular people. So it's like, if that guy did it, could I have done that? I don't know. Like, you'd like to think you could, right? But do you have 1,000 people charging at you, or are you being shot at, or you know, it's a crazy kind of thing. And I think that's kind of like my draw, especially to Gettysburg, just because I know a lot about it, is to look at that and say, you know, I'm standing where these great things happen. Like, how can you not be inspired by
that's
that?
That's what I always think, too.
And there's things, you know, if you look at the Battle of Gettysburg, there's 3 or 4 big moments there that really could have changed the whole perplexion of that war and the whole perplexion of our country going forward. If things went, you know, a different way within, like, a 5-minute period, you know, does the South just keep moving up north? Do they attack Washington? Like, these are crazy things to think about. This has ramifications all through the 20th century. Do we get involved in World War I if that's the case? Do we fight fascism in World War II? What happens, you know, when you have wars against communism? Like, how do all these things play out then? And some of those are good and some of those are bad, but it's, you know, you can like look back and be like, on day 2 at Gettysburg, if those first Minnesotans don't rush forward, take 80% casualties in their core, but hold that hole in the line, what happens then?
Right.
Or if, you know, Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain in the 20th Maine on a second day don't hold the left flank, do they roll up the left flank and get in behind the Army of the Potomac? Like, it's all these crazy things.
At that point, did we have real generals of war? Like,
or did we
did
just
the cream
have heroes
ride to the top, or yeah? I don't know. I'm not familiar
I would say the cream. I mean, it's a really good question. So another interesting part about Gettysburg, especially on the Union side, is you have like one supreme. You have one major general, George Meade, but you have all these other guys who are much lower in rank, making these life or death decisions. You know what I mean? Like, you know, Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain's a colonel. He's making that decision that they're going to charge down the hill when they run out of ammunition and push the, you know, the 15th Alabama or whatever it is. They're pushing them back away from that left flank where they're coming around. Like, you have like these mid and in lower level officers making crazy decisions that kind of save the day.
Were we taught the right things about this war?
I mean, that's a tough.
I always say, like, especially here locally, like South Park, we'll still stay on Gettysburg, but like McCluskey went to South Park. There's nothing there for him. You know what I mean? A statue. Like, wouldn't you have wanted to learn about this when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
I mean,
especially locally, what we put into the Civil War and things like that, you know?
I mean, I think so. I think it's important. I think it's like,
yeah,
it's like our fabric, right? Like, it's our cultural and our, you know, I don't want to say moral, but it's like what makes us. Like, you
it
know,
sounds
those guys
like that's
don't
your
do
start
that.
To your book, though. That
yeah,
war,
I mean,
where
I mean,
the flank and the,
yeah,
you
yeah,
know, because I think that's where you're saying, like, we had some tactics and there was really important things that happened there.
Yeah, and you know, that's a high-pressure situation. I mean, there's hundreds of those little stories all throughout Gettysburg, but I mean, you have some Western New Yorkers who make a real difference in that battle, and I think that's interesting. And, well, like Cushing, and you know, if he's not manning these cannons as they're pushing forward, you know, that's like 12,000 Confederate soldiers coming across trying to push through your line. If they get through there, like, do they just keep going? Like, what happens there? So it's like you have this guy who's like basically gut shot, still commanding his cannons. I mean, these are horrible scenes. You know, the horses are getting blown up.
And like you said, like the army are people. It's not
there's like some regulars, but there's, you know, it's all, it could be like you know, oh, Farmer Joe Smith down the street, he's my captain.
Yeah.
Like, how much time did he have to learn how to be a captain? Oh, 3 weeks, and then we had to ship out.
It's like, no, he brought the shovels.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's kind of a crazy, it's a crazy thing. And I think another thing that inspires me is, if you look at, they felt so strongly about the experiment that is this country, that they're willing to do that. I mean, that's like, I don't know, like, so if it's too cold, like, I don't even want to take the garbage out, you know, like, it's like,
I think a lot of people are missing that nowadays.
I mean,
so, yeah, like
mass casualties.
Yeah. I mean, this is,
that's, what did that leave America like?
Yeah. It's insane. If you think about what the population is to like the actual number, I think it's like 600,000 or 700,000 dead during that war from like disease and casualties. And, I mean, it's decimating whole towns. You know, it's kind of like England, World War One, where they had these buddy units, and everybody from the town would join up, and you know, and go like, "Oh, we're going to the front together." And then, you know, a German shell hits you. Well, that town is, there's no more men in that town. You know, yeah. Like that's kind of how the Civil War was. And even when some of those guys came back, they'd come back to a town where like, "Hey, that's where my buddy who died lives. That's where the other buddy lives." I mean, they'd leave that town because that's so many bad memories of,
yeah,
you know, some terrible things. And they didn't really have like PTSD back then, you know? So it's like, you know, in World War One, they started talking about shell shock, but even in the Civil War, they didn't really talk about it that much. So you have, I mean, not everybody's built for that, you know, like for,
I mean, you wrote for Veterans Affairs.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Right.
Yeah. It's, yeah, actually being able to talk, and I'm changing tracks here, but
no, that's fine.
Like being able to like talk to like World War II veterans is one of the coolest things I've been able to do in journalism, because their take on what they did. So I talked to like a bomber pilot who, you know, they flew a certain amount of missions and then they were done. That was like their rotation. And there was a, you know, he's a young guy. He doesn't have a family. And there's a guy with a family. He's like, kind of like begged him to fly this last mission. He had this like premonition that he was going to die. And this guy's like, "Yeah, just give me a whiskey, you know, and I'll do it." And he's like, I'm like, "That's crazy. You know, like you're chancing death every time you're up there." And he's like, "Well, it's my job." And it was like, it, I was like, "That's my job. That's what I do." You know, and I've talked to other people who, you know, they landed in Normandy and they're fighting through France to get to, you know, to get into Germany. I can't remember the town specifically, but this dude's like fighting a machine gun nest. And he's just like telling me like it's like he took a walk at a park. And every time I talk to these guys, I say, like, "You're so calm about it." Like you, he's like, "Well, that was my job. That's what they told me to do." You know, like there's a very, you know, I could see like the strain of thought where like, "Oh, they were just like mindless robots." Like, no, that's not it at all.
No.
Like they understood what that job was. They're fighting legit fascism and they're fighting, you know, just this destructive force. Like, what happens if they don't do that? Does, like, Britain's gone, right? Like, they don't yeah, survive that. France is already gone. What happens? What happens to the United States then? It's crazy to think about these things. And, you know, I think we're probably in one of those moments now, unfortunately. But it's crazy to think about, like, if things go one way or the other. Like, if you don't have a bunch of, like, you know, farmers from the Midwest that go and fight in Germany or fight in Normandy, what happens?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's,
well, there's cool, a lot of patriots.
So yeah. Patriots. So you, yeah, like when you say like, "I understood my job," it's not like, "Oh, my captain told me I had to fly and almost get killed." It's, if I don't do this, those guys are coming over, yeah, and they're going to kill everybody.
Gonna, yeah.
Yeah. Like, so the, like, there's a very, yeah, basic understanding of right and wrong and moral.
So, like, there's like the thing that I looked up when I was like with Civil War, I was like, well, it would be, you know, and I looked this thing up and they said like one of the most fascinating things about the Civil War was that Abraham Lincoln still made the Continental Railroad like, mm-hmm, the entire time. And they were like fighting on basically a war on two fronts.
Yeah.
You know,
so Lincoln's another one of my. Yeah, I'm like an obsessive. I get obsessed with these things. So like Lincoln is an obsession of mine. So Lincoln was very clear that he wanted to show the nation that they were still progressing. So like, you know, the dome on the U.S. Capitol building, mm-hmm, that was being built during the Civil War.
Right.
And they said, stop, you know, the Congress or whoever was like, we need to stop this. We need the resources for the war. And Lincoln said, no, we need to build this. We need to show that we're an operating capital. And that's kind of like what goes on with the railroad. It's like, we need to show that we're still pushing this way, that this is like a blip in a system, you know, and talk about pressure.
But like, those are the things that to bring it back, are like that we're building up the patriotism. Like we're we're still doing this.
We're still doing things. Yeah. And we're still like, you know, at the forefront of, you know, are the problems, like, of course, nobody's perfect. There's no country that's perfect, but you're still projecting that, you know, we're still this land that everybody starts on an equal footing. You know, maybe not at that point, but yeah, we're getting there. But you know what I mean? Like, there's still like, you know, people like trash the American dream, but at the same time, like, where else is a man like Abraham Lincoln going to become president?
He's a wrestler.
He was, yeah. Yeah. Statue
of him in Olean, giving somebody a letter.
Yeah, like, who? Oh, that's actually a cool story. But he's like from backwoods Indiana, you know, or Kentucky. Like, grows up in a cabin, has barely any schooling, self-taught everything. His dad was like, you know, writing's for idiots. Go, you know, split logs or something. And then, I mean, the guy's a genius, you know, like, and to be able to like rise up through that, become president, take on the enormous pressure of the American Civil War while your kid, you know, like, you have a son who dies while you're in office. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable. It's shocking to me. And do have the moral clarity to say, like, you know, I don't know. I took a class at Buff State once, and the professor was very adamant that Abraham Lincoln is this racist and he's, you know, this bad guy.
Really?
And, you know, at the time I was like, I don't know enough about him to like really argue this point. But you can see Lincoln's progression through the years. You can read what he writes. And by the time you get to Emancipation in 1863, like, his whole mindset is changing. And by the time that war is over, like, he's talking about voting rights and citizenship, and, you know, you can watch that progression happen. And I think it's interesting that, I mean, can you imagine how unpopular a stance that is to take in 1863, to say, like, you know, I'm going to emancipate slaves. And like, it wasn't all the slaves, like the slaves who were in the border states weren't emancipated, but it didn't matter. Like, once that got out, you can't put that back. Like, you know, like, you're telling people you're free who don't want to be slaves. You know, there's this whole like lost cause narrative that these slave masters were benevolent and like cared for their slaves and they had barbecues, and like, who doesn't want freedom? Like, that's the basic premise that this country's built on. So like, you don't have real freedom with slavery. If you're not letting everybody be free, you don't have like real mm-hmm. freedom. So like, he saw this, he understood this. You know, he kind of looks at the Civil War as like this, it's almost like divine intervention. Like, both sides are intoning God and saying like, God wants us to win. God wants us to win. If God wanted their side to win, they would have won, but it kept going. And he was kind of like, well, this is obviously about something more than the Union. This is about slavery. Mm-hmm. So there's like a few ways that he got there, but it's an interesting, sorry, I'm like way off.
No, you're all right.
But there was actually a comic that just came through here. She was from Tennessee, and she just hit the nail on the head, sort of. Like, she's like, you know, like, where I'm from, we came in second in the war. Like, we got statues everywhere. She's like, I come up here, y'all came in first. Yeah. She's like, you guys don't have a statue anywhere.
It's nuts, right?
It,
like,
is.
It's a Buffalo, like, Bills museum.
Yeah. You don't even think about it. Like, you're just like.
She's like, all over, second place statues. Yeah. All over the place.
You know, I, on one of my trips to Gettysburg, my wife and I stayed at an Airbnb, and much to my chagrin, the hostess of the Airbnb joined us for breakfast, which I just like hate. Like,
yeah, just, like, yeah, lady, yeah, get away.
So she's talking to us, and it turns out she's a Confederate reenactor. Oh, and I'm like talking to her, and she goes, well, you know, nobody ever won that war. And I was like,
Excuse me?
I was like, that seems wrong. I actually think somebody did win that war. like it was just such an awkward conversation. Like, how do you move forward from there? Like,
yeah.
I mean, we're talking like this is 2019, and you think nobody won a civil war? Like, what are we doing? Like, what?
Yeah, there's a. I was really interested in the Forest Lawn Cemetery, you know, like just looking up stories of like people who were buried there. Like, there's just a lot of like con artists from back in the day that you find out, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's like this guy who like said he like went to the top of some mountain and like, you know, then like the people who are like native, they're like, no, that's right there. The picture. Like, the top's up there. The guy was just, and he's buried there, like, famous explorer.
That's crazy.
But, like, it was, like, all proven wrong.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's, like, tons of stories like that. Yeah, I know.
That's wild.
But have you ever heard of what's up with, like, that Chichon guy a few years ago started putting up all the flags for the people that were, like, mass buried in Delaware Park?
Oh, was it the,
is that from, like, was
that
like
the War
plague?
Of 1812?
Yeah, I think it was.
Okay. Yeah.
It sounds familiar.
Yeah, I don't know how true
Pass.
It is. Pass. you know, right across from my house, there's a Pioneer Cemetery, and there's a War of 1812 soldier buried there. He died at the Battle of Fort Erie, which is kind of neat. But I don't know much about that. What was going on? There's a plaque in Delaware Park.
On a rock
that
I hit with a golf ball a lot.
Yeah, like it's pretty nondescript, right?
Yeah.
Like, you would have to know it's there to
It's always it. Grim over there.
Well, talk about Gettysburg. You like going there. Tell people what to look for there.
If you go there, have you guys been there?
No.
No.
So you go there the first time, and you're just like, it kind of blows you away how big it is, like how much there is to see. And you can do like tour, like audio tours and you know, you can get a basic sense of what happened. It's confusing. Like, it's, you know, there's 3 days of that battle. So it's like, you know, when I was younger, even up until like probably a decade ago, I'd be just driving around aimlessly and be like, oh, there's a memorial, you know, like, cool. Like, I wonder what happened here. Not really knowing anything about it. But now you can break it down into the first day, second day, third day, like where action took place. And you can also think about, between July 3rd and July 4th, the Confederate Army's still there. So there's still guys fighting. It doesn't get as much, there's not as much written about it, but there are still lives that are lost during that time period. So I think for me, Little Round Top really sticks out. It's closed right now because they're rehabbing the whole area. They actually found a Parrott rifle shell there over the summer, a live Parrott rifle shell from Confederate artillery. So they're finding like some pretty crazy stuff, but that, you know, you can get a whole view of the second day's battlefield from Little Round Top, and you can pick out specific parts of the field. You know, there's
Gettysburg because everybody has a story that was on the battlefield. And
yeah, there's
millions of stories.
Yeah,
that's the cool thing.
Yeah, and that's why there's like, I mean that bad. I mean, how many books have been written about Gettysburg,
sure.
Like 50,000. Like, yeah. There's no shortage of books.
Because somebody's ancestor and how they ended up today and where their ancestor died on the battlefield, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Stories like that all over
and
the place.
And it's interesting things to, like, have that connection back to the past. Gettysburg has some very distinctly named parts of the battlefield. Like, they have the wheat field or the bloody wheat field, or they have the slaughter pen, Devil's Den, Little Round Top, The Angle, you know, like very distinctly named places that kind of stick in your mind. Like, Slaughter Pen sounds terrible, you know?
Yeah.
That seems to like something bad happened there. Or Devil's Den sounds like not a great place to hang out. Or so you can kind of like go at it from that angle too. You can say like, I want to spend today on the peach orchard and see what happened there. Or I want to spend today in the wheat field. And they all kind of tie in together. There's also, you know, it's a huge battlefield. It's they've really done a nice job keeping it free of development. You know, over the years,
yeah,
like,
yeah, I was wondering how they do
because that. There's so many people died. It's like that's like the monument to them.
It is in like there's been like there's like a peach stand that opened at one point on the battlefield, and there was like a amusement park and miniature golf and a hotel. And over the years, like this, the American Battlefield Trust, which is an organization that preserves battlefields, has bought these parcels and torn down these things and restored it back to what it is. So like, if you go there now, you're looking at it pretty close to what it was in 1863, which is really neat.
Well, if our listeners haven't caught on yet, it's when we get somebody really smart, we just like to keep throwing stuff at them and see if they say a lot of interesting things.
It's working. Yeah, right.
I will let them be the judge.
There is one thing that came up a few times is the Fenian invasion. Yeah. Is that Western New York ties or is that just Irish?
It's both.
It's both? Oh, okay. Yeah, all right. So.
So the Fenian invasion.
Let's dive in.
My cousin Liam might. I hope he doesn't correct me on this, but So the Fenian invasion is basically Irish Civil War veterans who kind of like the Fenian movement is a broader movement for Irish independence in the 1860s, and they kind of decide like, hey, we're going to invade Canada as part of this broader movement. What better place to do that than the foot of Hurdle? you have a bunch of like, you know, veteran Irishmen who fought in the Civil War, a few like stragglers and hangers on, and they take a boat over to Fort Erie. They land. The Canadians are like, what the fuck? Like, what the hell's going on here? So like they're still like connected to the crown at that point, and they still are, but so they have like their militia come out, and they actually have a battle at Ridgeway, Ontario.
Really?
And there's actually Chinese. Yeah, there's like actually like a battlefield in Ridgeway that commemorates this, and they eventually push the Fenians back. They come back over the river. President Grant at the time sends like U.S. naval boats into the Niagara River to like dissuade them from attacking Fort Erie again.
And I've never learned this in school.
Yeah,
Yeah, there's right here.
Yeah, like there's a memorial on the foot of Hurdle to the Fenian invasion. So
I've never seen it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. It's fairly new, and I think sometimes if you go there, you might get lucky. And there's a reenactor standing there talking about it.
Wasted.
Yeah. So like
that's probably what they were. Was wasted, right? They're like,
I mean,
let's go.
Yeah. Like, I mean, this is like the time when Buffalo, like the Canal Street or Erie Street or whatever it is booming, bars everywhere and whatever.
Well, we'll
else.
Go to something less nerdy and more sci-fi. What about Gutelberg?
Oh, Gutelberg. That's interesting.
Anything?
Yeah.
Our local.
Do you guys know what it is?
I mean, I've heard versions of the story.
Yeah, so it's a. I'm surprised you guys asked about this. So when we were younger, we used to do like.
I always wanted to be a Ghostbuster.
Yeah. Who doesn't, right? Yeah. When we were younger, we used to like do ghost hunting and just drive around and be like, yeah, ghost hunting,
Pig man.
Our friends burnt the barn down. I think they had like, they couldn't go to Canada for like 10 years.
Really?
Got caught. I mean,
this is a funny aside. We used to drive around with Ray all the time and we drive around South Buffalo like just idiots, and Ray would always be like, he would yell out the window at some, be like, assholes, and they'd be like, Ray, and they'd be like, hey, what's up? It was hilarious. But so we used to go out there. It's a cemetery in South Wales on Gutelberg Road. And like, there's this whole story. This guy, Mason Winfield, wrote about it, about how there's a doctor on this road who used to perform illegal abortions, and he would bury the fetuses or sometimes the mother who passed away during the operation in this cemetery.
Chop their heads off and put them in the lake or something.
There was
put the bodies on the road.
I never heard that, but that's super
Like I said, it's all urban legend, right?
Yeah. So I have a few stories about this. So
great.
The first time we went there, do you guys know my brother Chris
at all? I don't think I do.
He's a good dude, but I thought he was up talking to me in the cemetery, and there's a side road next to it, and I was looking up there, and I said, stop being an asshole, and he looks over here, and he's like, who the hell are you talking to? And I was like, you. And we just like took off. So I swear I was talking to a figure in the cemetery. So that was creepy. And my dad has one ghost story. that he tells, you know, he's been telling us the story since he was a kid. So my dad went fishing out at Hunter's Creek, which is like right runs by Goodlesburg. And he was, you know, they're drinking, whatever. He stopped to take a leak next to a tree, and he looks over and there's a guy standing next to him. And my dad said, "How you doing, buddy? You don't like, I'm taking a leak, you stand next to me." And so my dad, the guy didn't say anything. My dad went back and he looked back and the guy was gone. So my dad has been freaked out by the story for years. When we started talking about Goodlesburg all the time, he took a ride there with my stepmom, and he was like, "This is where this happened with this guy." And he wouldn't even get out of the car. So, man. You know, I don't know how I feel about all this like ghost stuff, but there has been some things.
I mean,
that
you like
there.
To think it's like, like it's a little freaky, right?
Yeah. So my third story about Goodlesburg is we went out there one night and there's a bonfire next to it. And this is kind of a funny aside because I don't know if I've mentioned this yet, but I'm a volunteer firefighter. And this is kind of where I got my first impression of volunteer firefighters. So like, there's this bonfire and, you know, we get out and we walk up and it's two dudes. One has an axe and there's like two teenage girls and a teenage dude. And I'm like, we're like, what the fuck is going on here? You know, like this is super weird. So it turns out that this kid and these two girls were from South Buffalo, and they drove out there and they met up with these two volunteer firefighters who created this huge bonfire and are just standing there with axes. And I was like, and the dude's like, "Well, we're volunteer," you know, like in my mind, he's got this drawl, you know, like, "We're volunteer firefighters. We're making sure nobody gets burned." You know, like it was like Deliverance or something, you know? And, I always like carry that with me. So whenever I like heard about volunteer firefighters, I'd think of this like backwoods moron,
you know, like, couple dudes hanging out.
Yeah. Just like with like probably an underage girl from South Buffalo. Yeah. But yeah, that place is creepy.
Yeah. I always like to hear the story from different people's mouths. The last one I'm going to give you, Corn Planter.
Can you refresh my memory about who he is exactly?
I got him right here.
Pass. All right, I got that.
He helped the Senecas during the Northwest. The Northwest Indian War.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why I got track, Jimmy. Yeah, I got confused with Corn Planter and Red Jacket.
We'll say pass.
Well, I was at the, how do you say it, Goodlesburg. I was there once, and I was a fun guy.
I can imagine.
We took a bunch of mushrooms, and I got the runs in the cemetery. So I was scared. I wasn't really scared.
You ran?
Much. I had to get out of there for other reasons.
Yeah, that's a that's an emergency.
But talk about any interactions with the Native American connections around here. You just mentioned Red Jacket.
Yeah. So this is kind of a nerd story, but I dragged my wife to a Lincoln birthday party.
That's great.
At the Historical Society, which I was super pumped about because they had a reenactor like give the Gettysburg Address, which is like all time. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought he could have done a better job with the voice, but that's, you know, it is what it is. But so I'm like, you know, standing there. I took a few pictures. It's awkward at those things. You're just like, he gives the address and then they shoot off some muskets and you're just like, okay, now. Do I just go home? So this a girl walks up to me and she says, "Are you Mike Canfield?" And I was like, "Yeah." And you know, I could see my wife kind of giving a side. I was like, "What's going on?"
This is
here?
My wife.
Yeah. Yeah. So she's like, "I've been meaning to reach out to you, and you know, I'm a Seneca, and I really am interested in the Indian burial ground on Buffum. In South Buffalo, and I know that you wrote this story about the oldest house in South Buffalo that's on Buffum Street, and I've been meaning to reach out to you." And this is like legit like 13 or 14 years ago that I wrote this story. Like I had to like look it up and kind of remind myself what I even said in the story. It was still when Mickey Kearns was still like a councilman.
Yeah, he was trying to revive that house, right?
Yeah. And I think,
I remember that.
I think, you know, it's a very cool house. It's
I've been inside of it.
Yeah, like the old wood and everything. There's some rumors that it was the Underground Railroad, but I don't know how true that is.
I don't know either.
Yeah, there's no definitive proof.
Right, and the guy that was speaking at the home, he kind of said that too.
Yeah.
When they say that, it's kind of like, well, maybe you shouldn't have just said
that. Yeah, exactly. So it's, but she was interested in preserving this area, and she's kind of working with Pat Burke, who's a state assemblyman or whatever he's doing now. And, you know, she was like, oh, can you help us? And I was like, yeah, sure. Like, here's my email address. Send me an email. But it turns out that I grew up with her on Norman Street. I didn't even realize that at the time, but she grew up, she's a little bit younger than me. And her name is Missy Parker. So her great, great, great grandfather is Eli Parker, who grew up out in Akron Falls on the reservation there and was General Grant's adjutant at Appomattox Courthouse when Lee surrendered. So Eli Parker is who wrote the surrender terms for Grant. And there's this famous story where Lee says, at least there's one real American here. And Parker says, General, we're all Americans. So, like, she has this crazy connection to, like, this crazy history. And, you know, I haven't heard back from her, but I'd like to follow up and see, like, what she intends with this
property. Yeah, we'd love to talk to her, too.
That's you know, our backyard. I used to work at a group home on Buffum. And
152 Buffum Street. Am I right?
L?
Yeah.
What a beauty that guy was.
Oh, man. Remember the Ultimate Warrior jacket?
That dude was amazing. You would talk about boxing all, you'd be like, Carmen Basilio.
I'm going to get you, buddy. I'm going to fuck you.
What an absolute just beauty that guy was.
But I was there the day L and South Buffalo Dave almost fought at Tosh Collins.
Oh, jeez.
It was weird.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah, so just tough. Like two icons going at it. It was like Sting and Hogan.
Yeah, Al had a temper.
Al did have a temper.
Yeah, so I actually got headbutted there and like had like a legit concussion. I was also boxing at the time, so it was hard to tell where the concussion actually came from. Yeah. But I was like out of it, man. Like I remember I had to go to Mercy and they were like, had the like finger thing. And I'm like, I don't know what, you know, like I was, but I used to work overnights there sometimes, and I'd always look out on the, you know, the cemetery there and be like, man, this is super creepy.
It
like,
is.
Oh, man. That whole street.
Yeah, I think they moved most of the bodies out of there.
Yeah.
But it's still an interesting, like, it makes you think about, like, what was there before we got here? You know, it's a, it's interesting to think about that. And,
I mean, do you ever think about writing a book?
Yeah, all the time. You know, I think about writing Civil War books. I think about hockey books. I think about all kinds of, you know, I think about my own life story because, you know, part of the reason I don't do that is because it's going to step on toes of, you know.
Sure.
You know what I mean? But,
you know what I've been doing? Maybe, I'm writing one. You know what? Just use nicknames. Like we say, our buddy Al. I hate stepping on anyone. I don't know if that's legal, but we're running up the flag.
I feel like that's
if
like,
it was a buddy, it would be one thing. If it's can kind of like
But yeah, like hockey, there's so much of it. For me, I don't know how everybody else feels. I'm Stanley Cup over Lombardi all day.
Mm-hmm.
Way cooler.
Me too. I mean, I am too. Like I barely. I mean, I don't know. I hate to admit it, but I barely watch football. I watch like the first three games, and I'm like. I like if somebody's doing something, I'll watch it. I mean,
I love it.
Yeah,
but
I got.
I don't waste my life on it.
I got hurt pretty bad by them.
Oh yeah,
early 90s.
We all,
there.
Yeah, we're there.
I mean, we talk about it all time.
Yeah, like that was. It's a common threat.
You're going to be off
it's
for
a common
4 days.
Threat.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, dude.
Maybe
that really like, fucked with us.
Yeah, like I remember like crying because I thought I was going to be off because they were going to win.
Oh yeah,
and they didn't win, and it was like.
It's all that goddamn Jim Kelly's fault.
You know?
I mean, but we got a cool hockey story, too. I mean, but our droughts are long.
Oh, my God.
And
now, think of this. When we opened the bar, it was the last year they went to the playoffs.
Tim Kennedy was on the team.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Tim Kennedy was the third star of that game.
That's insane. Yeah, it's bad. I've had season tickets that entire time. It's been awful.
Really?
Yeah.
What have they given you? Anything?
No.
No. All right. Tell me this. Tell me this. If with your season ticket, you got a $20 voucher with your tickets to say, you know, because you don't want to say, hey, there's $20 tickets at the arena. But if all the season ticket holders just had $20 vouchers for tickets and they got to distribute them, like, you know, like give at least the season ticket holder the privilege to get you in there to spend all your money. Like, we're just seeing empty seats sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, and why are you not letting people buy tickets? And it's like, because season ticket holders, you wouldn't have season ticket holders if, you know, you just opened up the gates every day.
One of the things that got real annoying is that we were paying more for a season ticket than people were just buying $5 tickets on StubHub.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was like,
buy one, get ones, we're going on.
Like, this sucks, man. It became like a real chore. And I love hockey. Like, I watch NHL hockey.
But if you got to give out a bunch of tickets to your buddies and be like, come to the game, it's a $20 voucher. They're going to see you in a seat. Yeah. You
know, maybe they'll win. And like, it really got bad after. When it became clear that Eichel probably wasn't the answer. And
oh, then, yeah.
I mean, I spent some terrible nights up there where it's just like.
And then to see him now.
You're pounding, I know. But you're pounding those, like, at the time, like $13 beers on a Tuesday night. It's a bad scene.
And it's 4-1 in the second.
There's nothing good happening there.
No, but, and I talk to my buddy Mike Gangoff all the time, like, how about a beer garden, like the odd club? Yeah, that's cute, but that's over. Nobody cares about the bell anymore. That was great.
Yeah.
But like he said, give you guys something.
Yeah, it's got a – so I actually – so we were sitting in the 300 level, the top of the 300 level, like just, you know, nosebleeds, like sat right under the press box, like – as high as you can get. I loved it because I could stand up and nobody cares. But we got rid of those seats and I actually upgraded. Now I'm in the 100 level. And so far it's been fun. But, dude, beers, $18 a beer?
Like, listen, I went to the Islander game. And if you tip, and I'm a bartender, so I got to tip, it's $40 a round of nooners. I'm whacking nooners. I turn to my buddy. I go, we could do this somewhere else very cheap.
I know.
And that's the tough part.
Yeah, it's been a rough. I'm like cautiously optimistic that they're turning a corner. Like they have some real talent on the team, and I don't know. I mean, if this year if they don't make it, like what?
So if you wrote a sports book, would it be an all encompassing of all Buffalo sports, or would it be hockey?
It would be hockey. It would probably focus more on. Honestly, I've met some cool people in D1, and. Like the college
have you written
hockey.
About people who have gone pro?
I have, but not. They're not in the NHL.
They're Europe or AHL.
Yeah, so like guys at Niagara, they're trying to change this, but like their ceiling right now is if they make the AHL, that's amazing.
Yeah,
you know, like ECHL, Europe is probably a good spot. They've had like Niagara has had guys that make the NHL, but it's not
cup
like
of coffee.
Yeah. It's like, it's not like a Michigan or, you know, you're not having Luke Hughes and Owen Power come out of the same team. So that being said, there's a lot of interesting stories in pro hockey that are not NHL or even in college hockey. Like some of the, like the paths that these guys have taken, the sacrifices that they make to like do these jobs, like, yeah, they get paid decent, but like you're moving your family around every 5 years when you get fired, and you know, it's a tough gig. You know, I would personally like to get into scouting a little bit and like, you know, be able to like be more involved in the game than I am now. But that, even that's like, you know, you're gone 6 nights a week driving all over the place, especially where we live. I'd be up in Ontario, maybe like Barrie one night, Kitchener, you know, like
Thunder Bay.
Yeah. Like, who's the scout who figured out Pat Kane was going to be an NHL superstar? You know, like, that's
me.
I believe it.
But, I mean, the best guys I've ever met within the league are the scouts because they don't, you know, know the spotlight on them. No one knows who they are. So they go down to Swanee and they get into it.
I'll tell you a kind of a funny story. I'm usually in a press box by myself, and one day there's this other guy in there, and I'm, you know, like I'm just like sitting next to him and be like, oh, you're scouting today? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, cool. And I'm like trying to think of like what I can say to this guy to like be cool, and like I'm trying to think who he is. But I text my buddy, who's like the director of hockey ops for Niagara, and I said, there's a scout here today. And like, he doesn't respond for a while. And I'm like talking to this guy. I'm like, yeah, number four, he's, you know, I think he has some potential. And he's like, yeah, he's a player. Like, he's like, just kind of like, whatever, man. Like, he was being cool, but you could tell he like was like,
yeah.
Yeah. So
not
like,
again.
My buddy texts me back. He's like, yeah, it's Rick Dudley. And I was like, oh shit. But he had a
used to be a big player here, and he also coached.
Yeah, player, coach,
sounds like
general
a
manager
in a novel about.
He should have been hired over Housley.
Yeah, I mean, you could make that argument, but he. So he was up there. He had a winter hat on, and I just didn't catch it. But he was really awesome. I mean, he was super cool. Like once I was like, "Hey, you're Rick Dudley," and he's like, "Yeah, yeah."
you wore a headband when he played for
yeah.
us.
Like he's like a
like
seven
a Ninja Turtle.
Like yeah. My dad would be like, man, Rick Dudley kicks him. You know, like
oh,
my
yeah,
dad
yeah.
was like, you know, yeah, he was a tough.
They was he must have been with Ottawa then? Was it Ottawa? No.
Carolina.
Oh,
then,
okay.
So he's been.
He lives in Lewiston.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's why he like comes out and checks out the team. He's with Florida now. One of NU's guys did their rookie camp in I think Dudley had something to do with that, but. Which is, I mean, can you imagine being a player and you're all of a sudden you're at Panthers rookie camp and you're like hanging out with all the players and it was a great experience.
Thread. We're gonna have to call this guy up. You want to know who we got to call up? Who's that guy that just managed the Diamondbacks from Buffalo?
Oh, Torrey Lovullo.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I don't remember him being the manager of the Bisons.
I mean, can you imagine the stories Rick Dudley has? I mean,
we've been trying to get someone from that era. It's tough. We almost had Danny Gare, but Danny Gare actually has a business now where that's synthetic ice.
Oh, okay.
That's his big thing out in Arizona. So,
I got a Danny Gare story.
Oh, let's hear. Okay, I got a couple. We can't tell him on this thing, though.
my Uncle Tom, who was Wilbur's brother, was a state trooper for years. And just an absolute fantastic guy. He passed away, unfortunately. But he was a state trooper out in, like, the Clarence area. So one night, he and his partner pull over Danny Gare. And Danny Gare is, like, a young guy, you know, like a young superstar at the time. And Danny Gare goes, don't you guys know who I am? And my Uncle Tom goes, you're the sports guy. He's like, yeah. And he's like, O.J. Simpson.
That's funny. You ever... inch into politics, right? Covering politics. I know me and you go back and forth sometimes with politics.
Yeah. I kind of wanted to get into that a little bit. I'm more of a behind the scenes kind of guy.
Yeah.
With that. If
I'm saying writing about it.
Yeah. It's a tough,
like, it's better than writing for about bands, right? Because people more pay more attention. Like, the ink that politicians are getting
is
way more powerful than the ink that you'd be writing for a band.
You right? have to have, I will say you have to have thick skin because, I mean, Charlie Speck at the Buffalo News, he took over for Bob McCarthy.
Yeah.
Anytime he puts out an article, he's just getting crushed by both sides. Like, it's just, you have to, like, understand it. No matter what you say, there's going to be somebody who finds fault at it. Especially, it's such a polarizing time where, you know, I started to see the shift when I was at the news in 2016, and I covered the Trump protest,
mm-hmm.
and like, I was taking videos, like I was taking photos. You know, the protesters were like, thought I was a cop at one point. Like it was crazy, you know, and so. I got accused of being one of the protesters, which I wasn't. After the whole thing, the protesters wrote a letter to the news saying that I intentionally covered up police brutality, which is insane, you know.
Like, it's insane.
You know, like I wasn't gonna like I'm like videoing everything. Like I'm not gonna just be like, oh, I'm gonna delete that. He punched the kid with a nightstick. You know, like it was crazy. So you have to.
I mean, but that's what the internet does. It opens it up so much to both sides. And, like, we're not a two-paper town.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
Being in a one-paper town makes it tough because, like, where people sound off is on the internet, on anything you say. You know, it's like they feel like that's their platform.
Yeah. Yeah, which, I mean, it's, like, it's hard to, like, be against that, right? Like, you don't want to take people's voices away. at the same time, you can acknowledge that sometimes the voices are incredibly insane or stupid.
But like you look at why people wrote books back in the day because they wanted to get their point across, mm-hmm. but they wanted to do it smart. And like now it's more like clever quips. Mm-hmm. And like it's like all you have to be is just like the most negative person that you could be. And you're popular.
Yeah.
You know, like it used to be like people are like Ayn Rand. Oh, don't read her books.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Well, like, I'm reading Atlas Shrugged right now, and it's like, it's all about trains. That's why I brought up the train stuff before. But
you know, I like trains.
It's like, I'm reading it, and I'm like, what's wrong with this? And they're like, shaking their fist.
Yeah, yeah. Like, somebody told me something's wrong with
like,
it. So
you smart, so.
Yeah, it's a.
To prove you wrong? I don't know.
I do think, like, I used to be a big lover. Like, I love Twitter to the point where, like, it impacted my relationship that I was, like, checking Twitter too often. You know, like, I was so...
Scrollzilla.
Yeah. And I've come to, like, think that it just amplifies the worst possible voices. It does. Just people that are clearly have some kind of mental health issue or, you know, just some of the stuff you see and you're like, how is, like 500 retweets? Like, what? Are you insane? Like, how did that get that? You know, like, and then you're just like, where do I live? Like, yeah. what's going on right now?
And 30 seconds is too long.
Yeah.
I was texted the other day. I said, there's snow all over. I don't know what to do. I'm going to have to, without a manager. Because the emergency manager.
Yeah.
I got a text in 20 minutes. You got to take that down. What? For what? It's a fucking joke. But people take Twitter a little serious, and
I mean that's tough on you guys because they just get to write, you know, whatever they want on Twitter, and then it's
we talked about with John Warrow about it. It's just, what are you going to do? You got to be on there if you're a writer,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, and it's, I'll give you like a kind of a small example. Niagara had a player whose parents were very upset wasn't playing, you know. Like,
oh, in hockey? No way.
Yeah, I'm sure. I think you have some experience with this.
Yeah.
I have no say whatsoever. Like,
sure.
I couldn't be further from the person who makes that decision at Niagara, you know, who plays or not. And I'm just getting roasted by the parents and the family members and the friends. And I'm like, why are you chirping me? Like, yeah. I didn't make the decision, you know.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, it's almost like they wanted you to bash the coach that was making the decision.
Yeah. Hey, Scoob Nuts 49 doesn't think you better. Like, what do you think about that? You know what I mean? Like, okay.
But I mean, I think right now you have like your position in your life where now, like we were saying, like finding your thread, what you want, you could go and investigate anything. And eventually turn that into a book.
Yeah.
You know, like
and that's
your passion now.
Yeah. So to get back to nerd things, one of the things I really developed a love for is going to small town historical societies, asking them to pull everything they have from the Civil War, and just like the amount of letters I've read, or I get to like to me, it's almost like a spiritual experience, like holding a letter that somebody wrote in 1863 and nobody's touched it in 80 years, you know, because it's just sat in a box. And that's where you find out new stories or new things. And, you know, I live in Clarence right now, so I've been going to the Clarence Historical Society. And it's some of the things I've found in there are insane, you know, like... You know, I have to weigh, like, who cares about this? Like, am I the only person who's going to care about this?
It's however you rip the story. Where you rip it from? What catches their attention?
And it's, but it's like, at the same time, this is, like I said, this is our cultural makeup. This is our fabric. This is, like, what should keep us, you know, together in some ways. So, like, there are things I am actively pursuing. And, you know, I have a trip coming up to Gettysburg in a couple weeks. And I think that you'll see something from me at some point.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be about Gettysburg.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
If I had a guess.
It's tough for me to... I just... I have like an insane Gettysburg library at home. I don't know how my wife puts up with it, but she let me hang a Gettysburg map in the house. Like, it's pretty crazy.
That's great. You got to keep in touch with the history of America. That's for sure. Well, Marky, we love nerds, and this has been a great conversation.
Yeah.
With one of the also, king of the nerds.
We are saying that we need to have your sister on the program.
Yeah, my sister's a beast. Well, we went up and watched her in the Lake Placid Ironman this year, and she's amazing. It's a huge time commitment, and she's working out like 6 to 8 hours a day to prepare for those things. And you know, she's got that military ethic in her. It's kind of like Wilbur.
Yeah.
You know, like get up at six, you know.
Eat the shit on a shingle.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
God damn it.
I live on a street. He's still getting up.
Yeah.
He's still up, yeah, that early.
A little calisthenics in the morning, never heard nobody.
Nah.
Ah.
So he loves to harass me on Facebook Messenger, but yeah, she, you know, she'll be like, yeah, meet me at the gym at 4 a.m. And I'm like, I can't do that. Like, I don't have that in me, sorry.
I just told Marky I'm running a 5K next week. For charity, starting to get it. Yeah, it's for restless leg syndrome. Yeah, don't encourage him.
No, I need to encourage him.
That's amazing.
Well, Mike, it's great that we finally got you on. It's been a while. A good guy, a good nerd.
Can I plug something?
You can plug away, brother.
I just want to say that the Clarence Fire Department is full of good guys who are not what I thought volleys were. It was a good fit for me. I took the Buffalo Fire exam. It didn't, you know, I already had a writing career at that point.
Well, that's what we're saying, man. You leaned on something you had a lot of passion in. And
yeah,
you're still using the degree that you fought so hard for. You
exactly.
Know?
So the volunteering lets me do the best of both worlds there. So, but I just want to give them a shout out because it's, you know, they've accepted me and they, you know, it's a good group of guys, so
that's really nice to say.
Yeah,
support them. They got anything going out there in Clarence, support them, guys.
Yeah.
Well, as they always say, we tell everybody. Mike Canfield, you are now licensed to talk. Thanks, brother. Thanks for being a nerd.
Mike.
Keep up the good hustle.
God, I love
it. I will.